Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Well, not my home. I'm in somebody else's home today, which is rather fortuitous. I have with my friends Aaron and Hannah, and we're going to have a conversation. So thank you for being with me today.
Yeah, of course.
What do you guys feel is important about life?
About life in general, huh? I guess it's important to find happiness and, you know, do something creative, really. Those are like the two main important parts to it, I think.
What is creativity?
Just an expression of yourself in any form that you can do, I suppose. Like, be it art or writing or, you know, just creating anything new that hasn't been.
How about the spoken word?
Yeah, spoken word can be an expression as well. You know, like bards and stuff.
A bard. They're the loot people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty tight. So, what kind of things do you like to create?
Music. I was doing digital art for a while. I just, like, make stuff on my computer. Sometimes I paint. You know, cool. Not much of like a writer or a spoken word artist, I suppose. But
that's good. And you, Hannah?
You know, I like to create everything. A lot of painting, doodling. Recently, I'm trying to get back into tattooing.
Ooh.
We're doing resin crafts. I love to create like good meals. I love to create like fermented goods. I love creating clothes. I just like to create like everything I can, really. I really find like joy in being self-sufficient.
With tattooing, I'm curious, how do you practice tattooing? Is there a big difference between like writing on paper and going onto skin?
So the gun that I have right now is kind of like similar to an actual pin. It's just like bulkier, basically. So you have a couple different styles of like tattooing. But kind of, it's like similar to like writing on paper. You just have to like be a little bit better about your angles and about like the pressure that you're putting on. And like the lines, of course, are a little bit harder to do since you got like this like vibrating piece of machinery. But
I feel like each body part would be different too.
It is, right? Yeah. Like,
that'd be kind of a dynamic form. And each person too. I've never considered that. That's pretty intense.
Yeah, I haven't actually like tattooed people yet, obviously, because I'm like, not licensed, but
I've heard of people using things like pig skin.
Yeah, I have like fake skin right now that I use on, and I've given myself like a couple of little tattoos as well. But I do know that like part of like why an apprenticeship and stuff is so important is because things like, you know, the angles and like different like types of skin and like the thickness is like creates like the whole world of difference on like what sort of tattoos you can and can't do. Mm-hmm.
I lay you rolled with that splendidly. Thank you. I couldn't imagine. I'm so squeamish with needles, yeah. Like terrified. Like me positively too. Petrified of needles. Like eventually I do want to get one. Because of Odin's name, I want to get like two ravens.
Oh, nice.
Like on top of like a mountain.
That's dope.
Because Odin always had the two ravens that would go and like fly around and gather information for him. Yeah. So like Odin would never eat. He'd always have all these huge feasts for like all the gods. And he was like legendarily never eating and never drinking. So he would just sit there and listen to his ravens and look all sad.
That's a beautiful tattoo.
Yeah.
I will say that like, I'm sure you've gotten blood work and stuff before. You know, like the feeling of getting a shot, it's just very deep inside of you. You can feel it in your veins.
Nope.
Tattoos are 100% different. Like, I understand people being squeamish, and I'll never take that away. However, like, let's say, I don't know, like, this tattoo right here that I got.
Okay.
Everything on it, like, on my forearm, barely even hurt. And, of course, it, like, depends on pain tolerance, but
you can squeeze that shit pretty hard.
Yeah, you can squeeze that shit pretty hard. And it only, like, really punctures the skin at, like, such a, like, I don't exactly know, like, how deep, but it's very thin, so in comparison to getting a shot, like, really, it's nowhere near as bad. And there's certain parts of your body you get, and it's literally just, it feels like vibrations, yeah. Basically.
I'm gonna do it.
You definitely should.
I just think I have to be loaded. Like, completely stoned off my ass to do it.
Yeah, you have to find someone to, like, do it for you at home, then. They usually are pretty adamant about people not being fucked up.
So, I like Kratom, because I'll take Kratom for the day. It's really hard to tell if you're on Kratom, but you take a good enough amount of it, and you can't feel shit.
Mm-hmm. Like, I was thinking about that time that I, like, vomited in near the kitchen when you told me to like take kratom with the spoon and like put it in the back of my throat.
It's like doing some
I eat it like that 3 times a day.
I would always mix mine in the water beforehand and just drink it like a terrible
That's
tea.
That's how I give it to people now, because I, a couple times. Like, but no, like, it's psychological for me when it comes to needles. Like, I remember when my son's mother would have, like, blood work or doctor stuff done when she was pregnant with Odin, or, like, when, I remember one time she had some operation where she had to get, like, some thing removed out of her arm, and they gave her an IV just for the local anesthetic. Watching them give her the, get the anesthetic, I passed out. And it wasn't even me. Like, yeah. I'm so bad with the idea of it. But I do truly believe that even though there might be a psychological barrier, there's, like, nothing that we can't get past. So, like, I'm not averse to it. Like,
definitely.
That's pretty neat, though. I love the idea of, like, having art on your body. That's really cool. Like, hair. I think it's dope. You know, like I want to have as much hair as possible before, like,
you're kind of rocking it, honestly. Your hair's way longer than it used to be.
Except it's receding, so I'm going to have to do a hat soon. But, like, yeah. Self-expression is important. What are other ways that we could express ourselves, like, creatively?
Creatively, besides just, like, your, like, standard, like, making, producing, like...
How about art. Interactions?
I was about to say, I think that, like, we can, like, approach our, like, community in, like, a more creative way, you know, and just... I feel like you can really approach, like, all of life in a creative way, and creativity really just means, like... trying something new, or like trying something that is like original, you know, trying something that's like an itch, I don't know, like, just like a concept that's like not currently in place, you know, whether it be art or like how we like function in society. So like what we were talking about earlier with like the automation and stuff, those could be creative solutions, and as a society we could like create like a better system for ourselves that's well thought out and technically creative. But
so like I kind of think of even my life, like as I go throughout every decision I make, I feel the decision-making process is creative.
It is.
Because we are given so many choices every day with how we could do something, how we could approach somebody, you know? And part of what I think is really interesting about interaction is I think it has a contagious element to it. So you can have a conversation with somebody and decide in that moment to treat that conversation as something special or important, you know, and then perhaps maybe after you've left them, you know, if you give somebody attention, you give them the time that they need and they require, they'll go and treat somebody else that way.
Definitely.
You know, and then like over time you just have more people interreliant but not codependent, you know, because like earlier we were talking about force, you know, and like you could force somebody to do something, or you could work with them to do something different, you know, like there could be a compilation of people in that interaction, you know, like every day, at least kind of how I've been thinking about it.
No, I totally agree. I feel like life is just like a choose your own adventure, except like the next step isn't really like already like there, so yeah,
it just kind of shows up depending on the circumstance.
Yeah, like we saw that little thing earlier today. I saw this like post talking about how there was like some like family of baboons somewhere like in the world, and all of the like male baboons and like their little what's the word I'm looking for, like, you know, their like little, like, group, I guess.
Yeah.
They all died off. And so it was left to, like, the female baboons to raise, like, the young, like,
baboons. How did all the males die?
They ate, like, something that was, like, poisonous or something like that. Like, something that was toxic and, like, while they were out. But, like, all of them died. So it was left to the mothers to raise these baboons. And baboons, historically, fight and kill each other for territory.
Yeah, the males are very aggressive.
This one generation being raised by the female baboons ended up being so, like, these, like, babies grew up and they weren't aggressive, no matter, like, whether they were male or female, and kind of, like, reshaped, like, how they, like...
But were some of the babies male?
That's yeah, yeah, some of the babies were males. It's, like, all of the adult, like, alpha males, like, died off. So they kind of recreated, so, like, even when, like, the males grew up and stuff, that they became more, like... passive, and they work together in like a team way. So I feel like, you know, stuff like that like really relates to just like our real world too, like what you're saying, like conversation.
We're primates too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like I'm very interested in how primate cultures, and not even just primates, but like tribal man, because there's a lot of different ways to human. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was just telling my therapist this. I'm seeing a therapist on Mondays. It's good for me.
Hell yeah, dude.
But like I was telling her, I'm like, I'm profoundly uncomfortable in my society, and I always have been ever since I was younger, watching my dad go through it. You know, but there's a lot of different ways that people are organized, you know, and looking at primates can be very, very compelling. But to anthropomorphize a primate and to relate it to a human is topsy-turvy at best, but you can still learn a lot, you know, about things. So chimpanzees I find very compelling. So chimpanzees are male-dominated, very similar to the baboons. I think baboons are the ones with the very bright rears, right?
Yeah.
So chimps, female chimps, have bright blue asses too, because of different ways of promiscuity is how they refer to it, like sex, you know. So male-dominated tribes of chimps are usually about half and half, males and women. The males will work together. They'll form like little tiny groups within the tribes where they'll fight each other to gain dominance of female groups. And a big reason that that happens is because chimps only ovulate and are only susceptible to pregnancy like for about 3 to 4 days out of the month. So during that time period, they go bright blue. You know, not that sex doesn't happen at all times, but that's the only time that they can copulate. You know, and so during the showing of the whatever, you know, like everybody starts fighting, you know, and that's what causes all this aggression. However, there's a group of a different subspecies of chimp called a bonobo that lives in this isolated place of the Congo, and it's like there's only like a couple thousand of them. They don't live in like a lot of places, but they're matriarchal, and so they used to be called pygmy chimps. But instead of being a male-dominated system, the females are the ones who drive the society. They're very sexual. They don't have any showing of their promiscuity. So they don't have blue rears, they don't have any sort of color change, and they can ovulate at all times of the month. They can get pregnant at any time, which sounds a lot like what?
Humans.
Humans, yeah. Kind of like interesting, right? And especially because a lot of tribal cultures are also matriarchal, which I also find compelling. You know, like during interchange of like when two tribes of bonobos will meet up and fight, like find each other, they don't fight. You know, all they do is they spread seed and they go. They're one of the most sexual animals on the entire planet, you know? Yeah. Like, but it's, yet again, you can't anthropomorphize to a human and say, oh, this is how, like, but it's compelling when you look at the difference between male-dominated and female-dominated. Mm-hmm. However, I'll digress one more time. So they did this other weird thing. This was in captivity, which is different than wild animals. But they took all the males away from the females, and they raised the males on one side and the females on the other side. The difference between your story is that they're not baboons, and also there was no children. So they didn't have babies to rear, and there weren't any male babies. So it was a strictly male and a strictly female groups of chimps that were made. You know, the males, after the females were gone, stopped fighting, because there wasn't any sex to fight over anymore. The females, after about a week, would start pushing each other into the way of other ones to start fights. Yet again, this is in captivity in a very strange environment that never happens, but still it's kind of weird.
That's really weird.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, and very different from the bonobos as well. Like, anyways. Yeah, that's compelling. I really like the baboon thing. It's very interesting. Like, why do we do what we do? Why do we organize the way we do? All right, well, are you comfortable talking about any of the emergence of psychedelic medicines in mainstream society, like at all?
Sure.
Yeah? Like, yeah. What do you think about the effects for the communities that are starting to have more and more of these things available, you know, to them? Like, do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing.
I think it's a great thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, before this, like, revolution started taking place and, like, on, like, a more, like, governed level, we're actually having, like, you know, scientific proof that, like, let's just say, like, mushrooms, for example, that actually helps with, like, depression, PTSD, it helps people who have, like, ADHD, it helps, like, a wide range of just, like, mental illness, but on top of that, it also helps with just, like, fatigue, and it just helps with people who are, you know, I guess neurotypical, like, still maintain, like, this, like, creative, like, abstract thinking and just kind of like this awareness and like happiness. So, I mean, when you look at it from that perspective, there's...
So are you saying it can help people who are normal and people who don't feel normal?
Well, I'm saying it can be a life-saving medicine for people who have had mental illness. And such as myself, I've, like, had depression since I got diagnosed when I was 14. Mm-hmm. I've probably been put on upwards of 40 different antidepressants in my life. Everything has negative side effects. Either I gain weight, I lose weight, I can't sleep, I sleep too much, I, like, have mood swings. Just everything has these, like, really awful side effects without really much to show for why I'm taking it. Mushrooms, though, are basically, like, a life-changing answer, right? Like, if you can, like, for sure, like, maintain this, like, level of just, like, happiness and awareness in, like, a natural way, like, you are putting your body through, like, so much less bullshit, and...
When you can relax a little bit.
Yeah, when you can relax a little bit, and, like, you know, the pharmaceutical, like, companies, they really like to, like, mess around with you. Like, I remember I was, like, put on a medication when I was 14, and it was for schizophrenia, but they had these studies shown that it can also be treated for depression. A year later, I found out that, like, the medicine, like, got shut down and, like, sued because they were, like, advertising it to people with depression, but it was causing people to have suicidal reactions. This was, like, around the same time that I was having, like, some suicidal issues myself.
A lot of those drugs are probably serotonin reuptake inhibitors, where they block the ability of the body to absorb serotonin.
Yeah, the way that they function in general is just, like... causes more problems, I think, than solutions. But
well, if you think about it, these psilocybin and lysergic and dimethyl and any of these tryptamine drugs are doing almost the exact opposite of a reuptake inhibitor. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is they're flooding the body with almost an artificial source of serotonin. And it's like a very heightened state of that for a temporary time period, and that causes a lot of strange things. And like people still really don't understand why does what it does.
Yeah.
Like, it's still really hard to figure out a good answer for why the subjective feeling is so bizarre. You know, but like, I would say almost that psilocybin drugs are almost the exact opposite of what these antidepressants are.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
and you can feel it too. Like, when you are on antidepressants, and like I've talked to several people who have had the same issue, you feel like right here in the forefront of your brain, just like this emptiness almost. It literally, like, changes the way that, like, your brain feels in your head. Like, you can feel just, like, something's off. But with mushrooms, like, I just have only gotten nothing but, like, pure bliss, you know?
You feel connected.
Yeah, you feel... That's the thing, is you feel connected. You don't feel, okay, I'm sick. Okay, well, like, I'm, like, I guess I'm kind of happy. But you don't really feel the difference.
Well, I take them a lot.
Yeah.
I eat them frequently, and what I found is that because I'm a frustrated individual and I have frustrations in me, that when I take psilocybin frequently, I still have frustrations even when I'm on psilocybin.
Of course.
And even when I'm having a negative parenting episode with my child, or, you know, having some negative interaction where I know that I'm in the wrong and it's because I'm sensitive, you know, I would say one of the most profound things about psilocybin for me is that it helps me be very sensitive to, like, my surroundings and to myself. Where a lot of the times I can be deadened to it all because I'm busy, I'm working, I'm doing, you know? Like, so, I don't know if that relates at all, but...
No, I think it definitely does. Man, I just lost my train of thought for a second, sorry.
I cut you off, I'm
sorry. What was I going to say? I gotta think about this one.
Silly stuff.
I remember. I think another, like, benefit to, like, again, let's just, like, focus on mushrooms for a second, is, do you remember, like, around the first time that you got entrusted in mushrooms, every single person told you, 3.5, man, that's the minimum dose you can take.
Everyone tells you that.
And for years...
That's too much.
It is. That's, it definitely is. A 14-year-old taking that does nothing for them. So, like, you're having these people being told universally to take these high doses, and, you know, like, mushrooms... are very powerful. You know, if they get into the wrong hands and the wrong mindset and at the wrong dosage, you can have really negative consequences. Like, I'm not saying that mushrooms 100% of the time, no matter what, like, state of mind you're in, are beneficial, but, like, that reaction is definitely, like, I've met people who have, like, taken, like, large doses of mushrooms and they're just fucking weird forever after, right? Or, like, people who do, like, acid or something. Yeah, like, they, like, run into psychosis. But when you legalize it, you give opportunity for people to actually kind of benefit, and it's in a better way, I feel like. You know, like, trips are amazing, but nobody needs to be doing that all the time.
I call it the mystical experience.
Yeah.
There's that special moment where it crosses the threshold from being, you know, like, so the microdosing, I think, is beneficial for almost anybody.
Absolutely.
Like, I think most people should try microdose, a very small amount, and then maybe even over a period of time to see how it reacts with them. I think very few people should be taking large doses, and very, very few people should be going up to an eighth, especially with some strains nowadays. Some things are obnoxiously potent.
Oh, there's so many. We've, like, been researching, and there's just so many, like, and they're coming out, like, daily, basically, of these, like, this weird crosses. Like, what was that one that you found? It looks like cauliflower, essentially. Oh, it, like, makes your tubs look like cauliflower when it's growing.
Yeah, it's a strain called Enigma, which I guess is, like, a mutation.
I've seen pictures of those on Facebook.
Yeah, they don't grow caps instead of pins.
They're just nodes.
Each other.
People
yeah.
used to call those nodes. Yeah. I knew somebody who had access to Envy's at some point, and he had an Envy node that looked like a softball. No cap on it at all. It was just a 10-gram softball, just a fucking ball. You'd eat it like an apple.
Yeah, mushrooms are doing it. Like, when I first started smoking weed, you know, it was just like, you get whatever strain, you don't even know what it is, and it's like not the best. And now it's just like 99% THC concentrate for $20 like a gram. Like, I'm seeing the same, like, sort of stuff happen with mushrooms, and it's very interesting, but it creates an even kind of more scary environment where people are still being told 3.5, you know, then they get their hands on some penis envy or something insane.
Yeah,
yeah.
I ate like a tenth of a gram of envy a couple weeks back, and I was loaded for like 6 hours. It was like a tenth of a gram.
They're very intense. Yeah. As an adult, like, I hadn't started taking doses less than an eighth until the last 2 years, and I have not taken an eighth since the last 2 years.
I ate 5.5 grams the other night. I ate 2.5 grams of the envies. I had some albino caps. I ate 2 grams.
Oh my
of,
god.
And I took a hit of acid.
Brando.
It was cool. It was a very physical experience.
Man, that sounds physically. Very intense.
I was gnashing my teeth like a wild animal at some point. I was just like, it was very weird. I was just feeling my body. That's what it was. It's like whatever was in me just really wanted to feel my body move around. You know, so it's like all those weird. I'm sure that's what babies do. If you look at babies, they do the same shit. Like,
yeah.
No, like, but it's not for everybody. Not everybody is like. I've gone through a lot of what people would call traumatic experiences with psychedelics.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. And I've done it pointedly, and some of the most important experiences of my life have been the scariest ones and the most uncomfortable. But it's not for everybody at all. That ride on this stuff isn't for everybody. But what's cool about it is that there's so much range. There's so much range to it. Like with marijuana, when I'm smoking marijuana, there's like a cap in my brain until I'm satisfied. You know, and I get to that cap and boom. That's how most drug use is, you know? Like, but with psychedelics, and I've even been trying like very small amounts of acid too, like very small amounts of lysergic can be very beneficial. Like a tenth of a tenth of a tab. Like very, very tiny amounts. You know? And like I'm blown away by how profound a small amount is and how effective and useful it is as the big amount. Like that's bizarre to me. You know, like,
yeah, I guess for example, like last year we had some Amazonians, right? Like pretty normal cube strain.
Mm-hmm. They're they get big though. I had some last year too, and I researched them. They're interesting.
We had some chunky boys for sure, but the first dose that we took, we probably took 0.6, and we went to the store, and while we're at the store, like within 15 minutes, we felt them. We went on like a walk, and we're just like, we put on this like old music box, like vinyl we found from the Ark, and just like laid on the ground laughing for like 20 minutes. I decided to like redose a week later with 2 grams and had the exact same experience that I did on the lower dosage.
Mm-hmm.
And so that began this like phase where I was like, well, you know, like 0.5, 0.6 is really good. And I noticed that like, unless I'm bypassing a certain level, like they almost all kind of affect me the same way. And I feel like a healthier way too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Your body is not as prepared for this like insane like level of like discomfort.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody. Yeah, and that, I think that you put out a very important point, you know. But that's part of this new renaissance, is that this microdose shtick is, like, very mainstream, too. A lot of people are talking about it. From Joe Rogan to, like, all the fucking pop stars, Elon Musk, he microdoses. Like, it's good. That's a good part of that. That's part of this new culture that's coming.
We've been talking about that because, you know, in Denver right now, it's decriminalized to grow or possess mushrooms. However, last year, a year ago, or 2 years ago, sorry, there was this gentleman who was, like, around our age, actually, who got busted by the FBI for selling.
Federal can do whatever they
want. Yeah, and federal can still do that. However, it's in Denver, you know, where it's decriminalized. He got caught. He's facing $1 million fine and 20 years in prison right now.
Oof.
And that was after it got decriminalized, so...
Well, it's the same thing that happened with marijuana. When marijuana got even medically legalized here in the state, DEA was still able to go into many places in California and Colorado. Yeah. It doesn't happen often anymore because they figured out that all it did was make them look like assholes.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, yeah. And, like, that's why I think federal law changes are going to make huge changes. Like, I don't know, like, I can't remember where I first heard of it, but the Back to Nature Act, I'm pretty sure is something. I'm pretty sure I was watching that dude from Oregon describe it.
I've seen some, like, advances in it. I didn't know that it was actually, like, scheduled to be on a ballot or, like, you know,
the number
estimated.
I heard is 2024, but I might be talking shit. I'm gonna have to look into that again.
Yeah. I mean, that would be amazing, though. Yeah. But it's kind of strange. Like, I guess when, like, medical marijuana in Colorado specifically came out, like, I was a little too young to be following it in depth.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm seeing the same issues that we're dealing with.
It was legal by the time we were born. Colorado's been med since 1998.
No way. Didn't we have a vote, like...
Well, yeah, across for recreational votes. That happened when we were kids.
Huh.
But we've had medical dispensaries since the 90s. I think we did it before California. Here's my phone.
Oh, shit.
Shut up. I think you have it. I'll look it up afterwards. Well, yeah. I'm pretty sure we're like the first medical dispensary in California was like in 2000 something, early 2000s. Early 2000s.
That's crazy.
We're very little.
Well, the same issues, regardless, is like you go online, right? You go to peoplemagazine.com, Women's Health, and like, how to microdose? Like, we love microdosing here at this, like, popular publication.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of people inspired onto it, right? But on a federal level, people are still going to prison for 20 years for this. So, like, it's interesting and stuff that we have more talk, but it feels like it's almost like a way to get people more into trouble right now, which kind of sucks because, like, it is still being prioritized in a lot of places. And
but look at marijuana. Like,
yeah.
A lot of states that are still kind of against it are still pushing back. You know, like, I've heard, like, the state of Colorado has been sued multiple times by, like, non-marijuana okay states. You know, I think it's, like, 36 now. Like, 36 out of 50 or something that have gone med, at least.
Yeah, it's a very high number.
Yeah. Slow changes. To push society is, like, changing... is, like, you have a big ocean liner, you know, hauling ass. And if you want to make it switch directions, that bitch ain't going to turn very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, like... And so, like, but... I haven't heard of anybody getting any major issues, like, with marijuana recently.
You know, I've actually seen a few things, because it's still illegal to grow on, like, a commercial scale in your own home.
Yeah.
Like, every once in a while, it'll be, like, a news article from, like, Pueblo pops up, being like, big ol' freaking bust done. We guess what we see is keeping, like, 100, like, weed plants off of your property,
That's
you know?
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's insane.
Like, the most I ever had was 4. Like.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you're still doing that, like,
yeah,
with all the laws that we have in place, like, why the fuck are you... busting these people still, you know? I really just wish that we could, like, rush our drug laws into being better, but it's frustrating.
Think about how hard it is to change your own habits. Like, when we're trying to make changes in ourselves. Like, I've been trying to eat differently, and I just, like, it seems to be the hardest battle for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like... I've been eating like shit for years, and like I'm starting to finally get a little tiny budge, and I'm starting to finally feel my age a little bit, and I know that I can't do it anymore. I wake up and I feel like ass, you know? And it's like, it's not even like a substance, and like, I've had these conversations for months now, where I'm like, you know what, when I get to the store, I'm not gonna buy any shit. I'm not buying any Oreos, any ice cream, any potato chips. I get to the grocery store, I'm like, fuck, I need this and this and this and this and this. And it's like, I've been having this inter battle with myself, and I keep trying to change my direction, and it's a struggle. Now imagine 360 million people in a loose confederacy where most of them disagree. You know, that's what we're trying to change, is this opinion of this madman, like a madwoman, mad it, this mad being that is the group mind of our country. Yeah. You know, and honestly, I think if there was a being that could represent all of the United States of America, it's like a fucking 2-year-old. It's a toddler, you know, so we gotta use kid gloves and make sure it doesn't hurt itself while it does it, you know.
Yeah, and like reasonably that, you know, it's like obviously it makes sense that these things take a very long time to everyone to get on board. It's just, I wish it didn't, you know? Yeah. But this whole thinking, like the most broad like wish ever is just, I mean, I wish we were like better suited for like life and to like focus on our citizens' happiness, because people aren't happy. People are not happy. People are struggling out here.
I'm pretty happy. Overall, like, I feel like I have a very high quality of life.
See, that's good, dude. And I'm working to find that same happiness. I feel like I'm struggling right now, and that's why I'm excited to get back into, like, my, you know, psychedelic medicine. It's like a year, 2 years ago, I got diagnosed with lupus.
Okay.
My entire life leading up to that.
My friend's daughter has lupus, so I know how intense that is.
It's very intense. My entire life, I've had these, like, wrist issues. I've gone to the hospital, like, multiple times for, like, ovarian cysts, just, like, random issues. Found out recently it's lupus. What that entails is I have carpal tunnel and arthritis, so I can barely use my hands. I'm constantly getting migraines. I can't eat almost anything. It's so much. So to start taking care of that, like, I have to start eating better and exercising, and I have to, like, be careful when I'm in the sun. And even knowing now that I have this issue, and even knowing now that these things can help so much, I still struggle with, like, making changes. And it's interesting to see, like, how doing something so good for yourself just takes such a long time sometimes to get it, so.
It's worth it, but doing art's hard, too.
Yeah.
And sometimes sitting down on any project is difficult. You know, it takes time.
Yeah. I'm just trying to, like, refine my focus right now, and I don't know. I guess, like, being in, like, a survival mode sort of situation for so long just, like, kind of makes you a little sour, and I'm trying to be unsoured and try to, like, stop using that as, like, my main view of my life, but...
This place looks comfy. This is a good place, it seems, to do it.
Oh, yeah, we are
love
this.
I love the art on your walls.
Thanks, it's all me and Aaron's.
It's wonderful.
Thank you so much.
I need something of yours on mine, eventually.
Yeah, definitely do.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad that you're at least... It seems to me, my opinion doesn't matter much, but it seems that you're heading in a different direction.
It's nice finding something that I'm passionate about, because, like I said, with the lupus and stuff, like, I go to work full-time somewhere, and my body shuts down. I have to go, like, to the hospital. I have to, like, be sick for a few days because I'm, like, literally running a fever. My hands lock up, and I can't go to work when I can't move my hands like that. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's awesome right now to have a new direction. Like, this has been something that we've been doing since we started dating. This is something that we connected with when we began, like, knowing each other, honestly, and... It's amazing to have a direction. It makes life feel a lot more fulfilling. And then, you know, the last few years, it's just been, like, scrambling to be like, okay, well, I just need a place to live. Okay, well, I just need to pay rent without, like, really taking the time to, like, focus on, like, what areas will make me, like, happy and feel fulfilled and feel like I'm, like, actually contributing to society. And that's been really cool to get. It seems like a good direction to start in.
So do you think you'll stay in this place for a while? Or do you want to keep traveling? I've seen you guys have been doing a lot of cool shit, like a lot of road trips and stuff. I'm jealous.
It's been fun, honestly. It's been really nice.
What's the coolest thing that you've seen this year or over the last couple years?
Man, what did we do this year? We went to Arizona.
I think Arizona was my favorite for Megan and Justin's wedding, honestly.
It was majestic.
It was majestic.
I'm such a shtick, and, like, you know me, I've always had such strong opinions, and I've always been willing to be like, why do we need to get married in the first place, man, fucking community, man. And, like, I was blown away just by, like, the ritual of it all, the ceremony of it all, and I loved it. I loved being around all of the pageantry, you know, and I didn't think I would. I was blown away. I had a lot of resistance getting on the plane because I didn't know how I was going to react, and I didn't want to ruin anybody's time.
I feel that too. For a whole other reason, but.
And I got there, and I was just like, wow, this is a magical place to be right now. Like, that's what I thought about it.
Yeah.
It was magical, yeah.
They're happy. They're perfect for each other.
They really are. Like, I got pretty close to Megan over the last, like, year, 2 years, and...
She's my sister.
I love her so much. But that whole wedding, just, like, being out there, being able to experience, like, such a loving ritual, and just, like, having so many people around who just love them both was amazing. And then afterwards, we went to Sedona and, like, camped out for, like, a week almost. And
nice. That was beautiful
out there.
It was
so nice. Like, I think that was just one of my favorite things, just, like, the pink sunsets and, like, the mesas and the rock formations. But I love traveling. I think that as far as, like, moving around, we got, like, one or two more moves in us before we settled down.
Yeah.
Fort Collins is a beautiful place, but the average amount to buy a home here is $700,000.
Mm-hmm. It's not quite feasible for the average Joe.
I was looking, John Oliver, with his Last Week Tonight, he did a really good expose recently on renting. He did a lot of good research and really made a compelling case for why it is what it is. And I don't think you can get away from it anywhere. And I've always been like a relativity of scale guy. So like, yeah, you might go to Louisiana minimum wage might be $725, and then the rent might be comparatively cheaper. But I also talked to a Nigerian guy, and his money was like ludicrously different than the U.S. dollar. Like one U.S. dollar was like 200,000 Nigerian dollars.
For sure.
But I sat down, asked him how much his home was, how much he worked, how long he worked for his home, and relatively, me and him were working the same amount of time for the same percentage of our income for our houses. The difference was, if you came from Nigeria and came over here, your money would be worthless. Whereas if you go from the United States and go to Nigeria, you have a shit ton. So it all depends on the move and if you're depreciating or appreciating in value. Like, but this rental thing is almost like Western civilizations, like renting and inflation after COVID. You know, there's a very complex thing, and it's been doing it for a while, but especially after COVID, like renting sucks.
Yep.
Just cake. Like, I think most people are spending at least 2/3 of their income on rent.
Which the requirements are still the same, though, for, like, 1.5.
And I got denied food stamps. And I'm a single dad. And they won't give me food stamps, you know. Like, so I get you.
It's just...
Yeah, and you help, building more. I think that would help if we just had a lot more. I just see supply and demand. You know, if you had more housing, it would get cheaper. Like, maybe that would help. But I don't know.
Well, we also, like... If you look at, like, how many vacant houses we have in America, we have enough to home almost every person in America, like, all the homeless people, right? And it comes to the money. And what you are saying about it being expensive everywhere, that's totally true. That's very right. There's a couple other factors that come into play, which is a little scary, such as Colorado Springs. If you look at what jobs are out there in Colorado Springs, I want to say, like, back in 2015, this is at least what my professor told me, it was like 60% of the jobs in Colorado Springs are military. The next 20% are medical.
So
nursing. The rest is tourism. Tourism ranks no more than $2 over minimum wage.
Wow.
So here's what you're dealing with.
That's terrifying.
80% of the population is getting very high paying wages, right? They're working full time. They're able to support themselves. Maybe not like highest, but like they're getting paid enough to survive.
And they're getting supplements.
You got the rest of what is available for the average Joe's. Like people, did you go to college? Like I haven't graduated college.
I spent like 6 years in college, but I didn't get a single degree.
Same here. I was literally in college for like 4 years, didn't get a degree. I switched my degree, like major 5 times.
Me
but
too.
Like you have those people, their only job options are, okay, minimum wage.
Service.
The same houses are going for the same amount. People can, you know, sometimes afford it, but then you have all these people who literally there's no resources out there for them to like actually be able to afford more. So like,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially for the Springs.
And yeah.
I've heard the military shtick before. Like, yeah, that's a big deal. And like, it's still growing. Like there's still a lot of military people coming in. Like I bet you a lot of the incoming refugees or whatever, or immigrants into Colorado, because the population's been rising. Yeah. I bet you a lot of that's military too.
I'm sure.
I bet you.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
It's just if you don't have a college degree, there's certain places that are so much harder, and Colorado's one of those places. Like, our average income to rent or buy, you know, just like our average like price of living, cost of living is fucked here. And so like,
and it's only getting higher with inflation.
Yeah.
Inflation right now is off the chain. Like, and like, there's not just one reason why, there's like 100 reasons why. Like, but yeah, within crunch time comes hopeful, some sort of overhaul.
Yeah, something needs to change. It's like, even like buying groceries, right? Yeah. Like,
no, food's fucked. That's my biggest bill. Whoops. I spend at least $1,000 a month on food.
Okay, that makes you feel better, right? So, like, I used to spend on myself anywhere from like 75 to like 400, 100. Maybe like, probably not 400 for myself, 75 to like maybe 200 a month. For Aaron and I, we are spending close to $900.
I'm at 1,000. About $250 a week, and that's mainly because I have to have snacks for my son. You know, like just one box of snacks at $10. Like, I gotta get like 3 different snack items.
Yeah.
So that 4 times a week, 4 times 3, that's like $250 right there.
Yep.
And that's just fucking kid snacks.
Yeah, it's insane. So like, that's so insane. Everything's insane. Like, let's talk about this mushroom business, right? Okay. I don't even want to tell it. The last like 2 months, we've been working about anywhere from 13 to 15, 16 hour days, like every day of the week, nonstop. And the cost that we were estimating about spending, I don't know, tripled by 5. It's a lot more.
Yeah.
Like, for example, there's just so many things that are so expensive now. Like, we were gonna do our farmer's market, right? We found out like a month before, you have to have a certified scale to sell produce, to sell anything on like a weight base.
It has to be NSF.
Yeah, right.
Restaurant certified. You have to have a certain knife too to cook.
Yeah, it's like, but there's nowhere online that tells you about this, right? There's nothing, there's no websites, there's no resources. It's just randomly, oh shit, found it. It costs like $200 to buy that scale, just like simple produce scale. That's like, I think it's NTEP certified.
Yep, exactly.
And yeah,
it's a pound scale. Yeah,
it's a pound scale. Just $200. You have to spend $50 to even get it registered. So all in all, just to weigh stuff, it's like $300 just for that.
Yeah,
dumb.
Yeah, but it's just like the amount of money we've had to spend on just the most stupid bullshit has been insane. Like shelving $80 for just like the most bare minimum little like plastic or shelving like wire rack and.
Like, why is this thing so expensive? There's no need for that.
Yeah, so it's just like, it seems like a lot of entrepreneurial like directions that people can take, like. Again, we're running into the problem where if you're not a trust fund kid, if you have not been preparing for this for the last 5 years, like, it's a lot, man. This feels like the system wants to keep you down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely think it's built that way.
Yeah.
And it's, so I'm reading this book by this guy named John Stuart Mill. He was a English philosopher in the early 1800s. So he's a little dense. I read somewhere that you can still go to this museum in England and they have his head on display. They like,
cool.
They like embalmed his head so that like generations could see him afterwards because he was like a major dude. But he wrote a book on socialism, which he wasn't exactly pro-socialist. He was just a philosopher examining and analyzing the socialist model. And it's interesting looking at the first section of the book is just all the pro arguments from all the pro socialists, and he literally just he just took chunks of quotes and be like, and this is this person quote, like just huge block of quote, just like chunks of writings from other people writing about it. And the second one he goes in and he criticizes it. But one of the things he talks about within the capitalist model being broken is that as soon as you have capital, you have the need for middlemen. He's like, if you have pure producers and you have pure consumers and there's a direct line between the producers and the consumers, product is cheap. Example, one of my really good friends is an importer of tea. He goes to Vietnam and Indonesia and to like India like a couple times a year, and he brings back tea leaf. Darjeeling tea, really high first flush Darjeeling from India, can go as high as $20 an ounce, which is about $2 a cup. You can go to his place right now because he's a direct importer. Darjeeling is $4.50 an ounce, which is like a quarter of the price because there's no middlemen. This is what John Stuart was talking about, is that the problem with huge, complex capitalist systems is that all of a sudden you have to have a new branch of society that is interplaced in between the producer and the consumer. And then every single time something passes hands, you know, it gets more complicated. Every single time something passes hands, you have to have more bureaucracy to keep it in line and more paperwork to track it, you know? And also, the more times things pass hands, the lower the quality goes. It was a big thing he said, was that you have shitty things. And look at all of our produce right now. Look at all the fucking produce that you have in the grocery stores. I fucking hate going to the grocery store. If I could drive to a farm and just, like, buy off some farmer's market, that's where I'd go every goddamn day. Like, you know? Like, so I think a lot of these things is because there's all these systems of businesses propping up the society that sells fucking scales and weird shelving units, you know? And they're like, oh, well, this is part of the system. Now I have to have my job too, right? You know? Like, it's because it's this complicated capitalist model. You know? And I'm not a socialist by long means, but there's certain issues with how we're running things, you know? And I think a lot of people understand it. I think a lot of people, even the dumb ones, not that anybody's dumb, I'm sorry, but like, the more people wake up and they look at their own situation, they get uncomfortable, you know? Like, at least in my opinion.
Hey, I feel like as a society, it's just like there's just this general discomfort with the way that everything's being ran. And I am hoping that that is the start of us all becoming more conscious and being more productive on actually like making changes. And even if it's not like on a federal scale, making changes within our own culture and stuff, you know, like even
in our own homes.
Yeah, in our own homes too, just like in our own lives, just like making these differences. But I feel like a lot of these rights that people are like, why don't we have this? We have a like society in place where if we restructured slightly, we can have better healthcare, we can have, you know, better, like, you know, there's been studies on, like, universal income and stuff, and, like, who knows how it would actually work out for, like, the United States, but, like, on a small scale, there's been a lot of, like, cities in the United States that have tried, like, a trial of it, and they found that their, like, market became a lot better. They found that people were becoming more, like, creative and entrepreneurial, and they found that just, like, the general, like, happiness of life was, like, way higher. So, like, there's just, like, these things that we can do, but, like, it seems like these basic rights that people are like, hey, this isn't right, is being met with just, like, you're entitled, you know? This is just, like, an entitled mindset.
What's the individual mindset? Where it's the pull you up by your bootstraps mindset. It's the American dream that was pushed down all of the children's throat that says a couple simple ideas. One, if you work hard enough, you can attain it. Two, the more things you attain, the happier you'll be, you know? Both of those principles are false. You know, you can work very hard, and if you're not given the opportunity, you can still get fucked. And you can do very little, and if you're a trust fund baby, you can get handed it all.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it comes to noticing that people are humans, and that the production of society isn't as important as people being able to live. But for a long time, all of these things have taken preference over how people live. And it starts with making people think that they're isolated single units. You know, like, that's the heart of it, is you have to work hard enough to make yourself improve. You know, but maybe it's just about working together so that we improve. Like, why, that's a simple shift in mindset, you know? Like, how do we improve? You know, how do we profit? How do we make it a better place? Like, but that's difficult when we're in a survival mindset, like you said. Like, when we're struggling, it's hard to get out of that, you know? Because we're still protecting ourselves. Yeah. Like,
I think. And I think there's just a lot of people who are ready for that, and then there's another, like, quarter, half the population who, like, I guess, for example, like, when, you know, the Trump election was going on, I read this article that was talking about how most of his votes were coming from, like, farmers and people who lived in, like, rural America, and like looking more into that, it was because they have typically jobs in agriculture, they have to be self-made, you know, but their income on a general scale is sometimes poverty, barely going above like middle class, you know,
and they're paid to destroy their crops more than they are to keep them by the government.
But what happens is you have just like a society, you know, a town where it's like hard work is the only way you're gonna get paid off, you know. You have, like, people who've come from families of the same sort of mindset. So, like, people voted for Trump because he was telling people, you know, the American dream is attainable if you vote for me, you know? And so I think that people take that mindset all the time still, and like, if I'm suffering, everyone else needs to suffer, but they can't think about ways that, like, okay, well, this can improve my life and other people's life. And it's just like strange to see that sort of reaction from people, that like people scale their own suffering with like not wanting society to progress into a healthier and like, you know, more stable way.
When it could be worth it.
Yeah, when it could be worth it. A little bit of
difficulty could be worth it. Like, anytime. Like,
yeah.
That's very wise, I think. So, on the subject of agriculture, which I think is another reason why rural society could be getting angry. So, like, back in the 50s, like I'm not going to throw out quotes, but a large number of people were in agriculture, like a sizable part of the economy. And, like, nowadays, it's pittance because of industrialization, because of robotization and all the corporations. There's very little small-time farmers anymore. And this has made it, because it's so easy to mass produce, which on the front is amazing. You know, we're saving world hunger. We can produce so much food for so little, you know, because of technology. But this has also pushed people out of that force. You know, there's not a lot of factories. There's still factories, but a lot of that's roboticized too. So, you know, like, look at the workforce just 50 years ago to now. You know, most of the workforce is in service economy. Is like, other than the people who are really well paid and in specialized economy, but like most of the normies, you know, are in hospitality and service. Mm-hmm. You know, almost everybody I know is in hospitality or service.
That's what I've been in forever, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's important.
Oh, it definitely is.
I think there's
is.
A way for hospitality and service to be respectable, but of course it's entry level and it's low wage, so anybody can do it, and it's harder to produce, to keep yourself afloat. So you have a lot of these rural parts that used to be the breadbasket of the United States, where 50 years ago, you probably was very healthy in a functioning economy. And now because of change, a lot of these places are just having all of their capital just uprooted and going to these city centers because it's the metropolitan areas that you have service in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think that could be another part of it as well. But it is compelling. Thank you, guys.
Yeah,
of course.
I appreciate your time.
Yeah.
But I think this is a good point to cut it off.
Sounds good, my friend.
Appreciate you. We'll see you next week.